This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandra, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. I found this story on New Scientist. It's an AI chatbot, really better than a human doctor.
No, thank you for tuning in this week, and we'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. Anyways, I just want to dive in a little bit deeper because we've spoken about this many times, about how, you know, AI and one of the simplest use cases of AI is chatbots that we've already seen or at least experienced somewhat on like Facebook and all those stuff. But now they're putting it into medical because we know med tech is the future, where, you know, we've even talked about you could probably one day take a pill and that pill sort of, you know, talks to your body and it would release a certain chemicals to keep you healthy throughout the time, even so you'll never fall sick and all that, right? That's the future that we dream of. But that's like many years from now.
Yeah, either that or our brains in jars.
Oh, and, yeah. Futurama. But yeah, so one of the earlier, one of the more recent ways of seeing technology seeping into medical is actually just doing like a symptom checker. And Babylon Health is a UK AI firm, and they say that their version of its software can pass the standard exam taken by British family doctors, but of course some medics are pushing back against this claim. The unreleased version of its AI scored 81% on questions from an exam set by the Royal College of GPs, which is the professional body for British family doctors.
Yes.
But you want to say something?
Well, no, it also points out later on that the chatbot didn't take the entire exam. It took the questions that the company chose. And if you take any exam
where you choose
the questions, to be honest, getting 81% is not a great...
Not very good.
You should be aiming for 100% if you're choosing your own questions.
Now, the Royal College of GPs released a statement saying that a chatbot will actually never replace a doctor because of their wealth of experience and knowledge, but not to mention their gut feeling when they just know that something is wrong with the patient. This gut feeling thing, that's the secret to getting an AI being, you know, more dominant than us, right? It's that gut feeling. It's we can't seem to quantify gut feeling in numbers.
No, I think that's the case. I mean, to be honest, I think this idea of the chatbot's a bit of a non-starter, because when you ask people about their symptoms, people are often very, very vague. So somebody who says, for example, that they're feeling dizzy, they've got a headache. Now, that person could just be tired. Mm. That person could have a hangover. That person could be having a stroke. They could be having some kind of seizure. There's all kinds of things that could be happening with that. So you do need the human doctor in the mix. And also because one of the questions is usually about pain.
Yeah.
So where on a scale of 1 to 10 is your pain? And that, again, is not a very scientific methodology, because it's actually about your tolerance for pain.
Yeah.
So two people can be experiencing the same level of pain. One rates it as a 3, one rates it as a 9. Mm. So there are a lot of things that this kind of chatbot approach, I think, can't do. We've talked about AI getting into medicine, but I think it should be from a much more diagnostic point of view. You go into a screening machine, it looks at your blood samples and all of these things.
Like the X-ray and stuff, right?
Yeah, doing all of that kind of stuff. Because there are an awful lot. I mean, there are you know, tens of thousands of conditions and illnesses and whatever, far more than a human doctor can actually keep on the kind of top of mind. So the AI can help there, because it can narrow the field down to pass to a human doctor who can then do the house MD type stuff. So what we could be looking at with this kind of AI in the future is that the doctors become more specialized, and it also allows hospitals to operate with or operate more efficiently with fewer doctors.
Yeah.
So, you know, you actually do a lot of this screening up front. But in terms of this chatbot thing, I'm kind of dubious. Really dubious.
Because it's just a little bit weird when, you're exactly right. When I go and see the doctor and, you know, the doctor asks me questions about, you know, what's wrong with you today? And my answers are so vague. And I'm like, I'm talking to a human being. I can't imagine a chatbot trying to solve this problem
for
me, right?
No, exactly, because I think this is another case that we shouldn't necessarily be moving ahead with this kind of technology because the AI is not intelligent enough at this point. If it doesn't understand the kind of linguistic vagueness that people have when they're talking about illness, you know, it's very hard, like you said, even for a human doctor to understand what it is that you're saying. You're the person who is experiencing it, but you're having difficulty expressing it to the doctor.
Yeah.
So if you throw a machine in the mix that is not aware of the kind of linguistic sensibilities as well, I think it's potentially quite dangerous.
Yeah, but I do see a future in AI, especially in the field of like x-ray and also, you know, checking blood samples and stuff like that, and actually really getting down to the detail. I think we did a story about AI in x-rays and discovering things that doctors would generally, you know, not even see or spot or just understand. That gut feeling just is not there.
And not just that, I mean, we've talked about augmented reality coming in to help surgeons to actually kind of project a map of the patient's insides over what the surgeon is doing. Because once you get inside the body cavity, it's really hard to actually see anything because, you know, there's bits and pieces and stuff's hidden and there's, you know.
It's lunchtime, man. It's lunchtime.
No. You know, that a lot of this technology is coming in. A lot of it is very useful, but we shouldn't be relying on AI that is not intelligent, I think.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, let us know your thoughts. Like, have you actually, do you like to use an AI chatbot to diagnose little symptom things? I guess a lot of people would say, if it could give me a free MC, then maybe, you know, medical leave, then yeah.
I know, but you're going to get a diagnosis back saying, I don't know, you got, who knows, you've got Lassa fever or something like that. And your boss is going, okay, so you have typhoid and yellow fever, yet you were only off for a morning.
Anyways, we'll be right back with more. And we do have a king of the crowd, somewhat. BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Another article from New Scientist that I thought was just, this is just baffling. This is mind baffling. This is something that I thought would have been like from one of those forwarded chain messages on WhatsApp or, you know, Telegram and stuff, that it's just like, come on, this can't be true. Apparently, though, it's time to say goodbye to your tie. Because this businessware staple apparently reduces blood flow to the brain by squashing veins in your neck. And this is according to research from the University Hospital of Schleswig-Holstein in Germany. They scanned brains of 15 healthy young men before and after they put on the tie. And each participant, however, though, they were instructed to do the Winsor note and tighten it to a point of slight discomfort. And just after the men tightened up the ties, the blood flow through their to their brains dropped an average of 7.5%. In contrast, there were no changes of blood flow that was observed with the other 15 men who did not put on any tie.
Well, I guess that's the trade-off, isn't it? These guys are thinking, is it worth reducing the blood flow to my brain by 7.5%? Because it will increase my salary by 30%. So, you know, there's a trade-off that people are happy to do.
Yeah, that is true, though. But apparently, you don't have to worry if you're wearing a tie. You may not need to freak out at this point in time, because in healthy people, a 7.5% drop in blood flow to the brain is unlikely to sort of lead to any noticeable symptoms. However, it could create problems for smokers and older people, and also those with high blood pressure who may already just have like a sluggish blood flow due to, you know, either blocked or damaged vessels in their brains. So, and in this high risk group, an extra drop of blood flow due to tie wearing might actually just cause headaches, dizziness, and nausea. So, well, nothing to be really concerned about.
But it does kind of make sense. I mean, if you tie something around your neck
for long hours, especially.
Well, not just that. I mean, you know, if you strangle someone, you put your
seconds.
Yeah, exactly. You put your hands around their neck and you stop them from breathing, you stop the blood flow and the airflow.
Yeah.
The same if someone dies by hanging, that's basically a much stronger tie. But it's the case. For example, a lot of police forces in the world, they will only use clip-on ties.
Yes.
Because if a suspect grabs the tie, they could use it to asphyxiate the police officer. So, you know, people have known that there is a risk associated with ties.
Mm.
I'm really not sure how they've stuck around this long. I haven't worn one now for about 20 years.
Wow.
But I have to say that I've always hated wearing ties. I've always felt constricted. I've always felt uncomfortable. So this kind of validates what I've felt all of that time. And I'm smarter because I don't wear a tie.
You know, one of the solutions, if you do wear a tie, one of the solutions is to actually just sort of wear it looser. But it kind of makes it for like sloppy look.
Exactly.
So then just
ditch
it. Just ditch it. Yeah. Also because, you know, tie wearing is actually considered not like a sort of like a fashion statement or a prerequisite of professionalism, because they did a study in 2010. A survey found that only 1 in 10 UK hospital patients still believe that doctors should wear tie. And also businessmen today, they don't really wear ties, right?
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah. They would wear a blazer with jeans and sneakers. So there you go. That's the new style.
Or a pair of Speedos and cowboy boots. You know, whatever works.
Whatever works. Let's do King of the Crowd. What do we have for this week, Matt?
Well, I'm not sure if this is a King of the Crowd or a down in the dumps or what. I'm really in two minds about this. Oh. On the one hand, it might be really remarkable. On the other hand, it might be complete nonsense. These are the Agogi 2.0 resistance training pants. So again, probably not the thing that you were expecting me to start talking about. You know those resistance bands that you can use for fitness? Right. So these are those kind of athletic tights that people seem to like wearing now, but they have the resistance bands built in. Mm-hmm. So I think there are 8 different resistance bands. So every time you're walking or moving while you're wearing the tights, you're actually exercising.
Ah.
That's what I mean. It seems like a fantastic idea, and it seems like a really obvious one, and I can't understand why nobody has like done this before.
Maybe because it's just become tiring, maybe after a while, you just want to go and get a glass of water and you go like, oh my God, like this is going
to
be...
Well, you don't have to wear them, you know, 24 hours a day, but certainly they would increase the kind of aerobic capacity of workouts like yoga, for example, which are great for your fitness, but they're not really an aerobic workout. So you would increase the kind of stress training that goes on there. And apparently they are also better for kind of if you're working out, they will work areas that you might miss with your normal workout. So you get a more kind of all over treatment on your legs. So these things may be the most fantastic thing in the world. And there is a quote from, the CEO of Reebok about how good these products are, which I would imagine that that means that a big company is going to come in and buy their patent.
Mm.
But I just wonder why nobody's kind of done this before. We've talked about sort of various kinetic machines before, trying to use the kinetic motion of your body to, say, recharge a smartphone or whatever. So maybe this is just kind of step one on the path towards creating this kind of capacitative clothing, I guess.
Well, if I could just get fit by wearing pants.
But that's the thing. Yeah, you can just, you know, you just wear them under your normal pants. You're walking around every time you do, you know, all of us do a lunge in the office every now and again. So, you know, you're just tightening up as you go. These things should be available, I think, in October. They're not desperately expensive, but they're not massively cheap either. They're retailing at around $90 for a pair, $89 plus shipping. So if you are interested, you can go to Indiegogo and look for the Agogi 2.0 resistance training pants.
Just did 20 lunges there, so yeah. Typical day
in
the studio.
And if you'd been wearing these tights, you'd only have had to do 12.
Wow. Anyways, remember when, I don't know how long ago when you were young, Matt, but...
when I was young and my heart was an open book.
Nerf guns. They were really fantastic.
No, we didn't have those. We just used to jab each other with pikes.
So I personally did not have Nerf guns, but my cousins and my friends, they did. And, you know, it's just a... is just one of those things where in every birthday parties, someone would receive a Nerf gun as a birthday gift and we would all just kind of jump in and have fun with it.
Yeah, no, genuinely, we didn't have those.
All right. So now, though, in the 21st century, Nerf guns have updated themselves with a laser tag that you can put in a smartphone for augmented reality. They're combining bits of their nostalgic IP with this new modern technology. It will hit virtual stores next Monday, apparently. So it's a bit like Nerf is playing with the idea of like a laser tag that you can then incorporate your smartphone to help sort of, you know, take them to the next step and beyond.
Because we did have laser tag systems, but they were incredibly expensive because you had to have like the breastplate and a backplate. You know, it was just, and you'd get only two people could play and all of this kind of stuff. And it was just phenomenally expensive.
The first time I remember laser tag was when they had one in the Mines shopping mall, which was like in the, I think in the early 90s, late 90s, and they had one and it was like such a big thing. But and I was in my high school days, but I went all the way to Mines only to find out it was just really expensive.
Oh, really? No,
they just turned back and just like, we're not going to do this.
I mean, I got lost in one once in Cambridge. Yeah, they had like this little hall of mirrors, but it was also where the smoke machine was.
Yeah.
So I just walked into the smoke machine and I'm surrounded by mirrors and that was it. 10 minutes. I was just like, help.
Some say Matt is still stuck in there.
Yes, that's one of the dimensions.
Anyways, the good thing about this Nerf laser tag smartphone AR gun is that none of these sets would actually cost you more than $50. So that's, you know, quite affordable. And also, it will be available online July 16 onwards. We're not sure whether it's globally available, but yeah, do check it out. And apparently, it will be in the retail stores next month. But we do have Nerf guns here in the toy stores.
Yeah. But I can imagine this being quite useful for offices because, you know, people get annoyed by Nerf battles because the things hit people who aren't necessarily playing.
Yeah.
If you're using a laser, then
I love that.
It should be fine, you know.
That is a great idea. Get it for the office.
Yeah.
Do it for your team.
Perfect office toy.
Awesome. What do we have for GeekTunes, since we had like a very science-y bit kind of topic throughout the whole day?
I wanted to find songs that were about science, and I thought it was going to be really, really hard. But no, there were literally dozens of songs about science. I spent the whole of last night just going through lists and lists of songs. Some of them were not suitable for radio broadcast. There's a surprising number of science-themed country and western tracks. Who knew?
Wow.
But I've gone with something perhaps a little bit more obvious, but this is Public Service Broadcasting, the guys who use a lot of found sound and old historical narration records. This is from a couple of years ago. This is a fantastic track of theirs called Go.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.